Our study tonight is out of Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 to 5, the biblically consistent righteousness of Christ's subjects regarding judging. When Jesus said that one's righteousness had to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees as if he were to be part of the kingdom of heaven in Matthew 5:20, he had to clarify to his Jewish listeners how that could possibly be. For the Pharisees adhered to the principle of halakha, or concern for every jot and tittle of performance regarding the Mosaic law. Well, Matthew 5:21-7:6 provides many illustrations of this point by Jesus, and Matthew 7:1-6 examples how his kingdom righteousness on the subject of judging far surpassed that of the Pharisees as follows. I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through, actually 1 through 6. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, it shall be judged, and with what measure you mete, it shall be measured to you again. Why do you behold the mote that is in your brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how will you say unto your brother, let me pull the mote out of your eye, and behold, a beam is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first cast out the beam that is in your own eye, then you shall see clearly to cast out the mote out of your brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto dogs, neither cast you your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under feet and turn again and tear you or rend you. Okay, I didn't realize until I was studying this section that verse 6 actually belongs with verses 1 through 5, the issue of judging, and it provides a very important point. The Pharisees notoriously passed judgment on other people around them. Jesus alluded to this in his Luke chapter 18, verses 9 to 14, parable of the Pharisee and the publican. You'll remember that parable where both of these men went up to the temple to pray in Jerusalem, and the Pharisee thanked God that he was not a wretched sinner like the publican due to his righteous works of fasting and giving tithes for the publican. The man who knew he knew extorted money from others confessed to God that he needed God to be merciful to him as a sinner. Jesus concluded that the publican returned home justified rather than the Pharisee who relied on his own and thus his imperfect righteousness. And, of course, if we rely on our own righteousness, it doesn't work. Romans 3:23, it says, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And the book of Isaiah, one of the verses in Isaiah says, all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. So we can't measure up to the righteousness of God, but these people were judging. They loved to judge. And so Matthew chapter 7, 1 to 6 shows how the Pharisees missed God's righteous standard on judging. Now Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 has a call to judge not. It literally means stop passing judgment. It's a me crinita, it's a present imperative indicative with a subjunctive negative adverb. It means to stop an action that is currently in process. The Pharisees were habitually judging, so Jesus said stop it, stop judging. Now, errant judging activity was ongoing with the Pharisees, and for everyone's sake, including the Pharisees, it had to stop. Now, the reason for this call comes from the fact that in the same way one judges another, he himself will be judged not only by other people, but by God, and that to the same measure that they judge. You notice in verse 2 of Matthew chapter 7, the Lord Jesus said, for with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. That works both in regards to God judging us, but it also regards to other people judging us. A number of times, I know you've heard this and I've heard this, someone will come to me and said, someone's just critiqued me, but you know what? They critique me, but they're going ahead and doing the same thing, maybe in another area of their life and so forth. So it's very, very difficult. In fact, it's impossible for someone to receive the critique when the critic himself is doing the same thing, maybe in another area, maybe even to a greater degree. So we have to be careful. We're going to pass judgment. We better make sure that we're squeaky clean in regards to our own issue. Otherwise, it's going to backfire. Same with God. If we pass judgment on another individual and we have a problem, he'll deal with us the same way. He says, oh, you're going to do that? Okay. Let me point out something in your own life. So there's a real point here that Jesus makes. We have to be careful about judging. Now, contrary to the beliefs of some, this does not mean that we should never make a judgment about another person. See, there's some people that believe that Jesus is saying here, you can't make a judgment about anybody. But that's not what he is saying. Because if you look down to verse 5, he says, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to cast the mote out of your brother's eye. And if you're going to cast the mote out of your brother's eye, you have to make a judgment in regards to your brother. So it's not wrong to make a judgment in regards to another person. What Jesus is saying is be very careful that before you make the judgment on the other person, that you've got the beam out of your own eye. So, his point is not that we should never judge others, but that we must correct our own lives before we can biblically judge others, lest we receive retaliatory judgment from others and also from the Lord. And Christ explains this in verses 3 to 5. Jesus expressed his opposition to a party hypocritically beholding and thus judging the speck. The word, Greek word is karphos, which is a speck or a chip or a small piece of straw, chaff, or wood that was in his brother's eye when he had a beam of wood. Dokos is a beam. It's used for the word, like if you had a piece of wood about the size of a 2x4, we have a construction man here, Dave Slayton, they would understand that. If you had a 2x4 in your eye, you know, it's versus judging someone else who's got a little, maybe a bit of piece of sawdust in his eye. So Jesus says, you really can't be an effective judge if you've got a beam in your own eye or 2x4 in your own eye. He's speaking, of course, he's in a speech, a figure of speech known as a hypocatastasis. It's something that is blown way out of proportion, but he makes the figure of speech that way in order to get, so that we can get the point that he's trying to make here. So Jesus noted the great hypocrisy of one telling another to remove the speck in his eye when he had a beam in his own eye, indicating that the critic is often blind to his own problem, as shown by the illustration of man's judgment being skewed due to the blindness created by the beam in his own eye. So not only would God judge such a critic, but others would retaliate, denouncing him with his own judgment, being it his blind miscalculation, declaring him to be a hypocrite. Often, if a person is censorious, they have a tendency just to go around and make judging their calling. There often is a tendency to make a judgment that is based upon a person's own blindness. Generally, people who are very sensitive and who are aware don't make it a habit of going around and denouncing others their calling in life. So we have to be very, very careful about this. So Jesus directed that we clean up our own life before judging another. That's why he says, thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then you shall see clearly to cast out the mote out of your brother's eye. Now we come to verse 6. This is a really, really good one because I hadn't seen the connection here before, but the commentary brought this out, the Dallas Seminary commentary, and I really appreciate it. Sometimes, even if our heart is right with the Lord, our life is right with the Lord, and we have a critique that we can share, sometimes even then we shouldn't. Because if the party that we wish to critique is not ready to receive it, we can get a tremendous retaliation if we give it because the person isn't ready. So in judging others, Jesus added that we must criticize only if our critique will be received, or the critiqued party will retaliate even if our criticism is correct. So we must not cast our pearls of corrective wisdom before swine, that would be ungodly people, lest they trample them on their feet and turn again and tear us to pieces. Matthew 7, 6, give not that which is holy to the dogs. That which is holy in the context would be the valid criticism. But sometimes we just can't give it. Neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and tear you. I heard a report in the news here recently about a man who went into his hog pen and he was killed by the hogs, torn apart and so forth. So they can be dangerous. And so Jesus, you know, uses an apt figure here to illustrate the situation. So God does not want us constantly to critique other people or make it our calling, but to make sure that we are upright in our lives before we pass biblical judgment on others, and to be careful to voice our judgments only if we know that doing so will edify and be received towards the betterment of our hearers' lives. Now, sometimes we're put in a situation where we don't have a choice. I know sometimes as a pastor, I've been put in a situation. Sometimes in years gone by, there's been awkward situations in a Sunday school class or maybe in a fellowship hall situation or someone will seek to corner me in regards to an issue, and I try to get out of it because I don't want to share what I know is the truth because I know it's not going to be well received, but they press it, so I say, okay, well, this is what the Word of God says, and go at it. And sure enough, there's the reaction. But, you know, sometimes you can't avoid that. You have to go at it. But the point is, generally, unless we absolutely have to, the point is we need to make sure that what we're doing is going to edify. So may we heed Christ's admonition on judging, that we judge in righteousness and in wisdom. I'll never forget the day when I was preaching a sermon up in front of the church, and there was a man there who'd come, and I was teaching the Sunday school class too, and I saw him starting to nod off like this, and I thought, oh, he's bored. And I thought, well, you know, so what? I thought maybe there might be a spiritual problem or whatnot. Well, about a week or so later, he came up to me and he says, Pastor, I want to apologize for nodding off in church. I have a physical condition that when I sit down for any extended period of time, even if I'm fully rested, there's something that happens in my brain and I'll tend to nod off and I try to fight it. But I love the ministry of the Word and I want to come, but I have to fight that. Well, I said, no problem. And then I kind of swallowed hard. I recognized I had privately misjudged this man, not knowing that he had a physical condition. And I was very grateful that I hadn't said anything. You know, so now if someone starts to nod off, I just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's not even my business. That's the person and the Lord's business. It's not even mine. And I just try to do my job. Because I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's in the heart. I know what's in the situation. There have been times when I've preached from the pulpit and someone will look at me and there's a slight scowl on their face and I'm thinking, uh-oh, what did I say? And afterwards I came up and they were just really moved because they said, you know, the Lord was really speaking to my heart. Well, they were so into what the Lord was doing in their heart, it showed up on their face, but it wasn't a reaction that I thought. It was just that they were deep in thought. So the scowl was just thought. It had nothing to do with what was going on in the heart. And I have read as a pastor, I cannot read the heart from what I see in the face. I can't. Because what's going on in the spiritual realm is way beyond. So I've had to learn the hard way not to judge in my own area of ministry and life, but not to pass judgment. Now, like I said, this doesn't mean we can't pass judgments. Elders and deacons in a church, in a passage, I don't think we have it here, I didn't put it here, but there's a passage in 1 Timothy that says that lay hands suddenly on no man, which means that deacons and elders and pastors and so forth in the church have to make a judgment in regards to a person so that they don't put them into a position of leadership too soon. Or accept them back into church fellowship after they've been excommunicated without them really repenting and so forth. So, and that takes a judgment. So we have to make judgments. Children have to obey their parents, which means parents constantly have to make judgments in regards to their children as to whether their conduct is to be commended or to be punished and whatnot. So there's nothing wrong in making a judgment, but we have to make sure that it's done when we're right with the Lord. And then it has to be done when it's received. Now, in the case of parents and children, it's a different situation. The child may not want to receive, but they got to get it anyway. You know, that's just part of immaturity, and the parent has to deal with that. So there's an exception there. But we're talking about equals, adults with adults. Need to be very careful in regards to this.